This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Paul Anka was a teen idol in the late 50s and early 60s. He wrote most of his hit songs like Diana, You Are My Destiny, Put Your Head on My Shoulder, and Puppy Love. After outgrowing the teen idol identity, he wrote the song that became Frank Sinatra's anthem, My Way. And at Johnny Carson's request, Anka wrote the theme for The Tonight Show. He returned to the top of the charts in 1974 with the hit You're Having My Baby. Now Anka is making a comeback doing other people's songs, songs few people expected he'd even care about. His CD, Rock Swings, features swing versions of rock songs from the 80s and 90s by bands like Nirvana, REM, The Pet Shop Boys, and Van Halen. Rock Swings debuted at number 2 on Billboard's jazz chart. Here's Anka's version of Bon Jovi's It's My Life.
This ain't a song for the brokenhearted. Silent prayer for the faith departed. I ain't gonna be just a face in the crowd. You're gonna hear my voice, I'll shout it out loud. It's my life, and it's now or never. Ain't gonna live forever. I just wanna live while I'm alive. It's my life, my heart's an open highway. Frank said it, I did it my way. Just wanna live while I'm alive. It's my life.
That's Paul Anka from his new CD, Rock Swings. Paul Anka, welcome to Fresh Air. Why did you want to cover songs from the 80s and 90s? It's like not your period.
Very simple, actually, and I don't know that they're covers in the true terminology. A cover record from whence I came in the 50s is to pretty much emulate another record. All songs out there, whether they be from the 40s or 50s or of standard quality or whatever, you know, they're all fair game in terms of re-records. I've done the old standard route for many, many, many years. I realized that there was a window out there for swing music. And when the record company came to me to do a swing album, I said, well, you know, certainly I'm indigenous to that world. I've hung around Sinatra. I know all those arrangers. I grew up with those people. But it's somewhat been done to death, and you have a young cult of guys doing it who probably don't even understand it, but it just seems to be the thing to do. I said, there's some real great music from some great bands and some great artists from the 80s and the 90s, and that demographic have grown up, and I think that a hit is a hit, a good song is a good song, and I don't think that we should pigeonhole music. And I said, within my mind's eye as a musician and a songwriter, there are some songs out there. So I went in and recorded it, and it evolved, and it worked out.
Now, I'm a big Sinatra fan. I really love so many of Sinatra's recordings.
So am I.
Yeah, well, I knew that. One of the Sinatra recordings I don't love is Bad, Bad Leroy Brown. You know, I think sometimes when Sinatra went into rock, it didn't quite work. Though the truth is, I don't like the original of Bad, Bad Leroy Brown either, so maybe that's not a great example. But were you concerned that some of your records might sound like Sinatra doing Bad, Bad Leroy Brown?
Good comparison in a sense, not an analogy to this. And I agree with you, that's not one of my favorite records, even though Don Costa, who I introduced him to, did that arrangement. I don't think that it's the same. I think that, you know, I looked at this stuff honestly and picked songs that I felt that I really got into and that I was motivated. You know, Sinatra went in and did a lot of those songs as just a throwaway. You know, they were just one take, like his films. He wasn't really into it. He did it because he felt, you know, in some cases it would sell records. I didn't look at it that way. I felt that, you know, coming as a songwriter and a musician, unlike Sinatra, I knew what to do with them as a songwriter. I knew how to work with them as a musician to make them personally mine. You know, we can't look at it as religious fanatics as to music.
One of the songs you do on the new CD is Nirvana's Smells Like Teen Spirit, you know, probably their most famous record. Mm-hmm. What did you hear in this as a potential swing song?
Well, it started with assessment of the charts. When I looked at all the Billboard, you know, I saw the importance of grunge, you know, that whole Seattle movement. The Nirvana record is an anthem. He's a poet in a sense. You know, I understood it intellectually and what and where it was coming from. But when I looked at it, I said, you know, wouldn't it be wild if I could find the groove for this? Because I saw it right away in its melody structure. As a musician, I saw da 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 ba ba da ba. It does swing. The only thing I had to get over was to assess, you know, lyrically, how much of it, because I left a lot of the song out, how much was I going to use? How did it lay into this real swing shout that is probably one of the best swing shouts on the whole CD are those two instrumental releases. You know, I heard that and that really hooked me. So I really selected the lyric that when I sung it would be at least believable enough for me once I got it into the pocket. But I knew it was an important challenge. I knew the importance of the group and I just had to do it. And I've since heard from Dave Grohl, who's with the Foo Fighters, who was a part of the band, and he heard it. He heard me do it on Letterman, and then he heard the record, and he said, man, you know, I didn't recognize that lyric for about 20 seconds, but what a classic and great arrangement and the treatment. He went on and on about it. The reason I say that is because I felt in my heart that, you know, we're all creative people here. We're all part of that mosaic. And if I can create that and take a song that, you know, no one felt really had a chance to go there and really impress one of the guys that wrote it or that was a part of it, then my job is complete. And I've made a huge point there as to not pigeonhole that a good song's a good song.
Well, why don't we hear the original Nirvana version back to back with your new swing version of Smells Like Teen Spirit. And this is
okay.
This is Nirvana followed by Paul Anka from Paul Anka's new CD, Rock Swings.
Out less dangerous, here we are now. Entertain us, I feel stupid, contagious, here we are now. Entertain us, a mulatto, an albino, a mosquito, my libido, yeah. Worse at what I do best, and for this
that was Smells Like Teen Spirit, performed first by Nirvana and then by Paul Anka, as featured on Paul Anka's new CD, Rock Swings. Oh, Paul Anka, the problem with that lyric as a swing song, and mm-hmm. and I know other people have pointed this out too, is you know, you don't really hear the lyric that clearly on the original mm-hmm. record, but when you sing a mulatto, an albino, a mosquito, my libido, yeah. It's mm-hmm. just, I don't know that the lyric is meant to be heard that clearly or kind of swung that way. How did you feel, what did you do to try to make that part of the lyric work for you?
Well, I think the key is it is what it is. You know, you can look at abstract art or poetry or of any kind, and you know, you have to respect, you know, the person that created it. Originally on the original record, you know, the way they mix those records, it's not necessarily let's hide the lyric. The fact is, it is the lyric to the song, and I think that those that grew up with the song hearing it this way, not unlike taking a film from way back and modernizing it. It's the same analogy. You can't go changing the lyric, but there are people that have identified with it, that understood the original record, and that, you know, you can't sit down and hand out a pamphlet every time you record something as to what it means or what you mean by it. It is what it is. It swings. Those are the words. And if it's poetry in a sense, take it for what it is.
Paul Anka's new CD is called Rock Swings. We'll talk about his years as a teen idol after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Paul Anka, and his new CD, Rock Swings, features his new swing versions of rock hits from the 80s and 90s. How old were you when you knew you wanted to perform? I mean, you were a star in your mid-teens.
Mm-hmm. I was around 12 or 13, I realized that I had a talent for writing. I was working, around that period at the local newspaper, at the Citizen, and with the editor, Mr. Finn, and wrote some short stories in school and won some awards. So I started as a writer, and then what evolved was I started typing 60, 70 words a minute and then taking shorthand, and hated shorthand, got thrown out of that and put in a music class because I was a fan of music, and started taking piano and drums, and just around that age, 13, 14, 15, realized that, you know, I could play the piano, and then I started taking these poems that I'd written and started writing songs about it, and then started working in local plays around town in the school, started a group called the Bobby Soxers. So I was this huge music fan. From that window, from 13 to 15, you know, realized that there was this fire in my stomach, and I pursued it from there.
Your first hit when you were 16 was Diana, which was produced by Don Costa, who later mm-hmm. became Frank Sinatra's arranger and producer. Mm-hmm. And at the time, he'd been doing arrangements for Steve Lawrence and Edie Gourmet. How did you meet Don Costa?
Well, I left Canada, where I was living at the time, and I wanted to get to New York. I'd already been there prior to meeting Don Costa because I knew that's where the music was. I won a contest collecting soup wrappers for Campbell's Soup. There was an ad in the paper for IGA Food Stores, and it said that if you collected these soup wrappers and put your name behind, put it in the box, that you could be selected, on and on and on. So I won. I got a job at IGA, clocked all the cans leaving, went to the houses. Anyway, I win from my district.
Wait. So you got this job just so you could collect more soup cans?
Uh-huh.
Wow. That's so ambitious.
I was a very ambitious young man. And I won the contest, and I went to New York with 40 other guys from Canada and a little box lunch, went to the YMCA. They put us up, and I really got a sense of the scene down there, Alan Freed, the rock and roll, everything that was happening. So I knew I had to get back there. I had some friends of mine who had a hit record at ABC Paramount called the Rover Boys, a song called Graduation Day, and they steered me over to
was
that
We'll
Costa.
Remember Always Graduation Day?
Uh-huh. It was a big hit back then. And I was a fan of the Rover Boys, as I was for the Crew Cuts and Four Lads. So I went up to see Don Costa, and he saw this young kid walk in, you know, T-shirt, jeans, in a time when, you know, that wasn't the thing. It's not, you know, like it is today, where you've just got this rash of kids running around making records. And he said, okay, play me something, because they were a new company. And I sat down and just started banging away at the piano, and I played Diana and Don't Gamble With Love and a couple other songs, and that's where it all started. He, you know, said, where's your parents? In Canada. Can we fly them down? Blah, blah, blah. And we signed a contract, and that was the beginning for me. I never went back.
Okay, the song Diana, the lyric is, I'm so young and you're so old.
You're
this
so
my
old.
Darling, I've been told. I've read this was basically about your babysitter.
Well, she sat a couple of times for my brother and sister, but she wasn't on an ongoing basis. She was someone I saw at church. You know, new in the community, small community, Ottawa, mm-hmm. Canada. And I saw her from afar most of the time, and then I would, you know, run into her socially at certain gatherings. But back in the 50s, unlike today, you know, if you were older by a few years, if you were taller, if you didn't have a shot. You know, that's what it was back then. And she was all of those things. And but I had this little crush on her, and thus I'm so young and you're so old. I would play it at parties for my friends. The word would leak out to her, and she thought it was rather cute. I mean, there was no real spiking of emotion there. And I just went on with it, and I'd put it in my pocket and just kept writing until I had the chance to, you know, originally I started playing those songs for these groups that would come to town, including Chuck Berry, and nobody really paid any attention to me, and that kind of really motivated me to go on and sing my own songs, and that was my first record.
Well, why don't we play it? This is from 1957, Paul Anka singing his song, Diana. That's Paul Anka recorded in 1957. He has a new CD called Rock Swings that features his swing versions of rock classics from the 80s and 90s. Now, in 1958, I remember hearing your hit, You Are My Destiny, which starts with this big orchestral flourish and a chorus singing, Destiny, Destiny. And, you know, I must have been around eight, and I thought, I don't know what destiny means, but it sure sounds important. Did you have any sense when you were like 17 writing the song of like the bigness of the emotion saying you are my destiny?
I was aware of it. It was, you know, a part of just, you know, evolving as a writer and really kind of setting a new kind of trend, because most rock and rollers weren't really into the big orchestras. And you know, that record actually was a case in point to Buddy Holly, who was a very good friend of mine, who wanted to change his style and, you know, was leaving the Crickets and told me that, you know, he was just being robbed blind by a manager and wanted to change, but he wanted to make a record like You Are My Destiny. He was very impressed with it. And he wanted to do It Doesn't Matter Anymore, a song that I wrote for him with the large orchestra. And that was the last session that he did before he went down on that plane on our sister tour.
Wow. Why don't we hear You Are My Destiny, and this is 1958, Paul Anka. My guest Paul Anka's big hit from 1958, You Are My Destiny. And Paul Anka has a new CD called Rock Swings that features rock songs by people like Bon Jovi, R.E.M., all recorded in a swing style. I want to ask you about another hit that you had in the 50s, Put Your Head on My Shoulder. And this was a big expression at the time. And, you know, yes. If a girl put her head on her boyfriend's shoulder, that was really a sign of their growing intimacy.
Yeah. Commitment.
Commitment, yeah. Now, I don't know that I've heard that expression in decades. I mean, was that already a big expression when you wrote the song?
It was certainly, a physical act. I don't know that we used it that much, and obviously it doesn't prevail today. But what all that was about, I was really writing everything that I observed. Whether it was Lonely Boy, Put You on My Shoulder, I remember very clearly I would, you know, I'd be the guest of these disc jockeys. Back then you'd record something and be invited to sing at a high school. And all I saw when I went to these high schools was everybody, the ultimate game was to get your head on somebody's shoulder, whether it was there or in a movie house. You know, you'd take a girl to see a movie and for the first 15 minutes you'd worry about navigating your arm around her shoulder. And then the next 15 minutes was to get that head on your shoulder. So it was a big deal back then. And, we all knew it as kids. And when I would go to these dances and sing and be alone up on that stage, ultimately those that got there I saw those heads on each other's shoulders, and that was like the cool move of the time.
Why don't we hear some of Put Your Head on My Shoulder? This is Paul Anka.
Put your head on my shoulder. Hold me in your arms, baby. Squeeze me oh so tight. Show me that you love.
We'll talk with Paul Anka about writing My Way and the Tonight Show theme in part two of our interview, which we'll hear later this week. Anka's new CD is called Rock's Wings.